Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Starting today, the formerly defunct Free Press, a local alternative publication that existed in various forms for some four decades in Columbus, will return to the stands. Coming up later, we'll hear from the editor-in-chief and the new managing editor of the Free Press about how they'll buck the odds in an age of declining newsprint readership and advertising revenue. Joining us now is Rick Edmonds. He's the media business analyst for the Poynter Institute, its International Journalism Strategy and Education Center down in Florida. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Good to be with you, Ann.
You know, we're used to hearing about the buyouts, the mergers, and the shutdowns of newspapers these days. The sale of the Washington Post to Jeff Bezos is the latest. You know, in Columbus 2011, the largest local media group, the Dispatch Printing Company, bought out several properties, including a chain of community newspapers, Columbus Magazine, and the local weekly alternative, The Other Paper, which was shuttered 2 years later. Just that scenario alone of a company like the Dispatch Printing Company buying up the local leftovers. How common is that sort of buyout these days?
I think that's relatively common. I don't have a big list of all the cases. The first one I was aware of was when Pulitzer still owned the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and they did basically that. They bought a bunch of surrounding weeklies and various other things, and it's not too uncommon. And you know, you can sort of see the logic that it gives the newspaper company control of more different media and, you know, kind of the ability to sell ads, say, into the magazine as well as the newspaper. And in the case you're citing there, go ahead and close what used to be a competitor if that's their choice.
You've written that for the first time since the Deep Recession began in 2007, newspaper organizations have grounds for a modicum of optimism. Does that analysis include the likes of alternative print weeklies? And by the way, the Free Press will also be online.
Right. Yes. And I think that if you go back to 2007, when things started to get a little bit bad, and then they got much, much worse as the recession deepened, there was something very much like a free fall of advertising. I mean, it just was going away so fast that you know, you couldn't necessarily foresee would it be even worse the next year or what. Now, unfortunately, we're still not at a point where new ventures are making up for the losses in print revenue. They continue certainly in the newspaper, regular daily newspaper industry, and I think the alternatives have had very similar kind of experience. But there is, I would say, some hope that may be slowing, and that full recovery from the recession will help. Plus, both papers and I guess the alternatives are, in some instances, developing side businesses, new businesses, related things that for which there's a market. I mean, for instance, some of them go into designing websites. Some of them will offer full digital marketing programs to local businesses. So there are some pretty good possibilities there. And I guess I'd say that's where the modicum of optimism comes from.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the newspaper industry right now with Rick Edmonds. He's media business analyst for the Poynter Institute. Coming up, we'll be talking to the two guys in charge of the Free Press, which begins publication again today after something of a hiatus. The idea is to replace The Other Paper. If you have a question or comment for Rick Edmonds, you want to talk about whether you think the Free Press can make it in this market, give us a call, 614-292-8513. The new weekly we're talking about, what we're talking about today, the Free Press is describing itself as a new weekly news magazine. Is there a market for alternative weeklies of any stripe anymore? Some people thought that they would escape the contraction of the industry because they were niche. They had something different than what the usual general interest newspapers had to offer.
Well, perhaps so, but I think in some ways that works as much against as for them. And here's what I mean by that they do have certain groups of advertisers, the categories of advertising in which they're very strong. But, you know, if you take something like restaurants and nightlife, typically a staple of an alternative weekly, you know, we're in the era of Yelp and OpenTable and, you know, just all kinds of specialized resources that provide some of that news and also provide a base, a very targeted base for advertisers. So they get hit by the internet competition in really, I think, basically the same way that regular newspapers do.
Yeah, right. Even though they may have an internet presence, they're still competing with those specialties.
Sure. And you know, take another example. They're vulnerable to competition from Craigslist. They used to have great big long sections of classifieds. Those are much, much smaller now than they used to be.
The publisher of the New Free Press is also relying on the traditional newspaper stand and, as I said, a companion website. What about that traditional newspaper stand? I remember back in Columbus when newspapers from all over the state had stands in downtown Columbus, and they're all gone now.
Right. This is free distribution, but out of a little box.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think that's still workable, and actually, you might say that's an advantage. One of the big so-called legacy expenses for newspapers, beyond printing, which is obviously very expensive compared to internet distribution, is getting all those papers sorted out and throwing them on somebody's doorstep every morning. That involves a lot of manpower. It involves a lot of driving and gas, which only has gotten more expensive. So it is more efficient if you minimize all that and leave the paper where people who want it can get it. And for many of these kinds of papers, which I guess is sort of the reason they're free, is that to build up a circulation base and do that kind of distribution probably would be more expensive than the circulation revenue it generates.
So how are alternatives holding up across the country?
Well, I think it's a contracting business, and there was a phase, I'm going to say starting 5-10 years ago, where some of the bigger, stronger chains, particularly the one originally based in Phoenix, New Times, mm-hmm. Acquired a lot of other titles. But just consolidation doesn't really, it takes away some inefficiency, but that doesn't really get at the basic problem of advertising loss and revenue loss. So there have been some that have closed, some that have gone bankrupt, some that have changed hands. And certainly the great majority of them, like the great majority of newspapers, are smaller than they used to be. They don't have as much news or as much ads.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you see any kind, as the economy improves at all, are these kind of niche publications, are they better able to come back because they're smaller, their overhead's less, their expectations are different?
Well, I think the kind of key here, and of course I haven't seen this publication, only heard your description of it, is that, you know, I do think there is a sort of natural place in the market for an alternative voice, and it may appeal to younger readers. You know, it maybe has a little bit more attitude and opinion than a mainstream newspaper would be comfortable with. And if it's executed well, you know, that can attract readers and then in turn attract advertisers. But I think the quality of the publication, you know, is really almost make or break. It doesn't necessarily have bright prospects just because of positioning. It depends how it's executed.
In other words, how it looks.
Well, how it looks and you know, whether somebody spending some time with it at lunch or on a coffee break or whatever finds things in there that are of interest that they want to read.
Okay. Rick Emmons, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Okay. Good to be with you.
Rick Edmonds. He's media business analyst for the Poynter Institute. Once again, today is the relaunch of the Free Press as a weekly. It'll be in newsstands. It'll also be online. We will be talking to the editor and the managing editor coming up. We want to hear from our listeners, though. Do you think Columbus is ripe? Do you think Columbus can handle another alternative again? They're coming in the wake of the other paper closing last January. What do you think? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. What do you think about having a new Free Press on the stands online in Columbus, Ohio? Do we need it? Is it time or not? We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last January, the Dispatch Printing Company shut down the other paper, the local alternative that had, for many years, flourished in the Central Ohio media market. But last January, by last January, the other paper had pretty much been rendered something less than what it had been before the Dispatch bought it in 2011. After all, no one expected the Dispatch to remain the focus of the other paper's media criticism, for example. Beginning today, there's an old, new alternative in town, the Free Press. Joining us now to talk about their venture, how it contrasts with the old Free Press, and how they plan to survive in this toughest era ever for newspapers and news organizations in general, is Michael Allwood. He's the managing editor of the Free Press. Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having us, Ann.
And also Bob Fitrakis. He's editor-in-chief of the Free Press. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Glad to be here, Ann.
And to our listeners, do you think it's ready? Do you think it's time? Can Columbus handle another alternative? Anything more than the Columbus Dispatch? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't wait. We'd like to hear from you. You can go to the Facebook page as well. So national trends would suggest that the odds are against you. Have you seen a product like yours emerging anywhere else as a template? Bob?
Yeah, there's been some written material on this, and the alternatives that are surviving, and there's some new startups as well in San Francisco, are run incredibly lean. Instead of the old staff, when I used to work at Columbus Alive, you know, of dozens of employees, many of them, like ours, are starting up with three or four full-time employees, and they really have to get buy-in from the community. They have to create partnerships with small businesses, and particularly many of those in the urban area are, in fact, very progressive. So if you can create community partnerships, and this one, unlike the Free Press, which was historically nonprofit with few ads, this one is going to have to sell half its pages.
I read that the goal is to fill the shoes of the other paper. How has the Free Press changed from what it was to achieve that goal? Michael?
Well, we'll have more entertainment-type content in the Free Press now that it was primarily a political function, the Free Press has been since the inception in 1970. It was primarily political. But we will have other things of interest in the paper. For example, restaurant reviews, theater reviews. We have a section we call Geek Speak, where they talk about comic books and gaming and things like that. We also offer, you know, a puzzle, a crossword puzzle, Sudoku. We have a nightlife calendar. We have an activist calendar. So we have a lot of content that's of interest to the general public, not just those who are of a political bent and are primarily political beings, like, for example, the Free Press used to be.
Let's get a look at this thing here now. It's a tabloid style. So far, so it looks very pretty.
Yeah, it's I mean, the Free Press was a little more edgy. I mean, there was a period back in the 70s and the early 80s where essentially yippie artists like Paul Volcker and Jim Biotti were doing a lot of the covers. So
my old friend Paul Volcker. And let me give credit where credit is due. The first thing you said was, it's pretty. And that's thanks to our layout and design expert, Ron Horsley, who created that cover and will be creating our covers in future. And I do recommend highly our lead story in this week's paper, and that is scandal, corruption, and cover-ups in Columbus City schools. I think there a lot of people are going to be surprised at what they read in that story. Bob has gone into great depth to explain what is happening with Columbus City schools, and it's an outrage.
Let's take some calls real quick and then move on. Lots of questions. Evan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Evan.
Hey, I have a question for the Free Press publishers. In Los Angeles many years ago, when the L.A. Free Press began selling ads, it found that it had to rely on ads from strip clubs and nightclubs and businesses with questionable ethics, sexism, and that sort of thing. And it damaged the paper's credibility. Some would say it even eventually led to its demise. I know that Free Press has traditionally not sold ads and is now about to do so. How? What kind of protections will be in place to keep the Free Press from following in the footsteps of the LA Free Press or becoming shamefully irrelevant and a weekly ad sales slip for bars like Columbus Alive?
The LA Free Press, but there are a lot of other alternative weeklies that resorted to that kind of advertising.
Yeah, well, we made the reason the Free Press never emerged as a weekly alternative because we actually made a conscious decision in the 70s and 80s not to sell those types of ads. We were uniquely positioned to move into the market. Right now, the way we look at advertising, we got to sell half this paper. It's a for-profit venture. So anyone engaged in lawful activity, what we're doing is, if you're a nonprofit or a small community, closely held corporation, family business, we're actually giving you much better ad rates to become our partner. So we believe in sustainability. We wrote about it, Harvey Wasserman, before anyone had heard about the term. So yeah, I'm not opposed to selling an ad rate to a strip club, but it's going to probably cost them twice as much.
Thanks a lot, Evan, for that call. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. Doug in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Yeah, good morning. I think this is just what Columbus needs because, we have a monopoly of thought and information in town. And, it's happening all over the country where, publishers lose money on their paper, but they make money by shaping the news getting $250 million bailout for their failed business plan, that type of thing, where they can control City Hall through their monopoly of information. So I was just hoping Bob and Michael could expand on that.
Thanks a lot, Doug.
Yeah, Doug, I don't think we could agree with you any more than we already do. I mean, that's one of the reasons that we're starting this is because one family, one company, controls pretty much all of the media.
They've controlled a lot for a long time, though. They've been the major newspaper since the Citizen Journal left town back in the 80s.
And they were forced out by the Dispatch because they're of a contract disagreement between the Citizen Journal and the Columbus Dispatch
over the printing.
But that was happening all across the country. Sure. That was the first big contraction was back in the 70s and the 80s during the recession then. Mm-hmm. Back when I first tried to start getting a job in newspapers, which was not such a lucky time. But has the Dispatch been that unusually one way or the other, in your opinion?
Well, I mean,
for one newspaper town?
The question is in terms of often balance. I think the last time they endorsed a Democrat for president was 1916, primarily because of their anti-war sentiments in German roots. So there's some of that that goes into play, but really it's the power. If you control 90% of the print media and you also control radio stations and you also control TV stations, it sets up a monopoly situation. I mean, they were called a monopoly when they controlled about 60% of the market back in the early 90s. Now that figure is much, much higher for print media.
And if I may, Ann, I think that you have to look at intent also on the part of the Dispatch. If you look at the acquisition of the former CM Media SNP empire, they acquired it not to continue those publications, but to take it off the streets. They had SNP, which was under the umbrella of CM Media, had 22 community newspapers that were in direct competition with the This Week brand of community newspapers. When they purchased CM Media, Suburban News, they axed all of the SNP publications, and they also axed the other paper in favor of Alive. And at the time they did, they put out a statement saying why they were taking the other paper off the street, saying that they thought that Alive better served the community.
It was a lot of repetition.
Yeah.
But the Alive used to be a muckraking newspaper. I was a contributing editor at the Alive from 1997 to 2000.
And I was a contributing writer at one point. Yeah.
And that paper won a tremendous amount. I mean, there were years when, year after year, in terms of the weeklies, we were either number one in reporting politically, environmentally. And the Dispatch actually acquired that first and really changed the tone and format, primarily into restaurant and concert reviews.
And see, and that's what I mean by intent. They have a history of acquiring publications in order to control them.
To make money, because that's what they want to do.
But they also control content.
Doug in Columbus, thanks a lot for your call. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment for our guest, we're talking about the new Free Press. It's out on the stands today. It's online as well. If you have a question or comment about it, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Do you think Columbus can handle another publication, or will someday the Columbus Dispatch or the Dispatch Printing be buying out the Free Press too? Don't answer that question. I want to get to some other calls real quick. Georgia has some questions about distribution. Hi, Georgia in Columbus. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, good morning. I just heard about this yesterday as a result of one of the teasers for your show, and I looked it up online, and I just want to say congratulations, and I'm pickled pink.
All right, so where are you distributing it?
Well, Michael's handling a variety of that, but we do have a tremendous amount of distribution on the Near East side. I'm a Near East area commissioner, Main Street. The Columbus Public Schools, Near East Side, the usual places, Grandview. People are out right now dropping into Grandview. There's 50 boxes, primarily in the downtown area, that the city has put up and is available to any newspaper. But also we have a distributor, so you can pick it up in Dublin and Marysville and a variety of places.
It'll also be available at all the metropolitan libraries.
Okay.
As well as, of course, OSU and Columbus State, which, with their mass populations, we hope are interested in reading it.
Who are you shooting for? Who's your reader?
Well, you know, the demographics, when you asked earlier about that, here's what we're picking up on. There's a whole lot of people that are baby boomers, and including myself, that still read. And there's also some of the people within Generation X. What we're hoping for is the millennials, the younger readers, that they'll be reading a lot of this online and hopefully picking it up, looking for the calendar of events that's going on with concerts, but also picking up some of the stories. So Michael's done a variety of things. Now, we have comics, we have crosswords, puzzles. So you'll actually see we have a geek beat. And, of course, I think we're the first newspaper that actually has a marijuana beat with the ongoing material going on with industrial use of hemp, medical marijuana. We'll be reporting on that regularly. much like other people, and will also report on the city council and the state capitol. So we're looking for intergenerational appeal. Whether we'll accomplish that or not is up to the readers.
The original other paper was a critic of the Dispatch. We talked about that already. But it appeared to lampoon the powers that be whenever they had it coming, be they Republican or Democrat or whatever their stripe was. Will the Free Press have any sacred cows?
Absolutely not. In fact, the next issue, which this is the first time it's gone out, is called Welcome to the Machine. I'm writing it along with Jonathan Beard. Our argument is that the Democratic Party that controls City Hall in Columbus, Ohio, should be considered an old-fashioned political machine with virtually no opposition whatsoever, and that it actually diminishes democracy in the city.
Okay. Let's see. David in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, David.
Hi. Thanks a lot. I think this is an important topic. I'd like to say hi to Bob. And I think the information is critical. It's really critical. I've lived in Columbus off and on for at least 50 years, and I think the lack of information hurts. And I hope you guys are going to do some more investigative reporting. There's certain environmental issues, and there's a lot of just basic health safety issues that are critical that we need to know about.
Yeah, let me bring up something. And by the way, no love for me. What's up with that? you'll find that we are going to cover environmental issues more than any other print outlet in Ohio. We have one of the foremost spokespersons on the eco movement there is, and that's Harvey Wasserman,
right,
who's nationally known.
But he's coming from a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
Yeah, but I would argue that point of view broke news worldwide. When the Japanese government was saying that everything was fine at Fukushima, Harvey's friends in Greenpeace were running in there as runners in SUVs, leaping out and taking pictures and absorbing 10 times the radiation they should in their lifetime and showing there was no roof on the place. So while Japan is reporting no problems, the freepress.org, which Harvey wrote for, was showing no roof.
Okay. Thanks a lot, David, for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. What about the tenor? You're going to cover the news. You're going to cover the hard news. There was always, when you talk about contrasting yourself or comparing the Free Press with the other paper, which is the last known alternative, they had a certain tenor, a certain tone to their writing. It was sort of tongue-in-cheek or sardonic. What about the tone? Because, Bob, you and Harvey, you're intense.
Well, I think a better comparison is the Columbus Alive from 1997 to 2002, which is very deliberately muckraking. Right. I mean, there'll be one muckraking story, investigative journalism, which is fact-based. And muckraking traditionally, although it's out of fashion now, was to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Really, it focuses on the real powers and how decisions are really made. On the other hand, we hope to have a very cutting-edge cultural section that allows great freedom in a variety of points of view. You know,
I intend, in the columns,
we're going to run libertarians. We're going to publish Republicans. In fact, Bill Todd, who ran for mayor, we'll offer people that aren't just progressives, but we want people to see a wide range of opinion in the columns, and we want tremendous cultural freedom in the cultural entertainment area.
How local will it be?
It'll be very local. And to go back to something Bob was saying about muckraking, let me point out that there's plenty of muck to rake in Central Ohio, and we intend to stick our rake into all of it. And about going back to the tone, the voice that you were talking about, it's going to depend on what section of the paper you're in. And I know exactly, like I said, I worked at CM Media for over a decade.
Criticized their tone in some cases as juvenile. I wrote some bad things about Danny Russell.
And so it depends on where you're going to be in the. And let me point out, too, that we're bringing John Petrick back to the streets of Columbus. John is in this first issue.
And he wrote an apology.
He's apologizing.
The reviewer that people love to hate?
That's correct. And I'll tell you what, I'm very pleased to have John on board because he makes people pick up the paper. And so you'll see the snark
and then
there for sure.
Throw it down and
and you'll see.
I love Rodriguez, and he wrote a devastating review. I'm from Detroit, one of my favorite musicians, but I hope he keeps it up.
We have a tweet from Joseph who asks, "What efforts will the Free Press be making to pull in an online constituency? You will have an online presence. Mm-hmm. What's that going to look and feel like?"
We're actually quite excited about our web presence. We're going to be having, it's not completely up and running, but very soon we're going to have videos attached to different stories on the web. You'll be able to go to those places. We're also going to put those, what are they called? Our QR
codes
yeah. mm-hmm. in the paper, so you can swipe it
and go
right to the story on the web page. So it's going to be pretty interactive once we're all up and running.
And the freepress.org, we've had tremendous success on the web. The freepress.org, which is one of the owners of the for-profit venture. But most of it was in California, New York, and Washington, D.C., you know, writing on the NSA. This weekly is going to be absolutely local and Ohio politics. Very few things. There's an article on the NSA, but besides that, it's all local coverage. And it'll be a different website, freepress.com.
And if I could point out, the website is columbusfreepress.com.
We will have that on our website at WOSU.org. My guests, once again, Michael Alwood and Bob Fratricus, both from the Columbus Free Press. We'll be talking about that more when we return. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Dan Fisher. The relaunch of the Columbus Free Press is today. It's online. It's in stands all across the city. They're working on that right now. If you want to find out more about distribution and so forth, we'll have a link to their website that you can go to and call them and ask them more details about that. If you have a question or comment for my guests, Michael Alwood, he's the managing editor of the Free Press, and Bob Fratricus, he's editor-in-chief of the Free Press. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I want to get to some callers now. Sean in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sean.
Hello. Hey, note. Do you guys are you guys familiar with Motor City Muckraker? That's something worth looking into. It's a basically a blog, but the guy does a really good job. I think it's kind of a one man situation. But
is it
really
a Detroit operation?
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you might take some hints from that. Also, you know, I'm around this. I am skeptically optimistic.
So are we.
Covering all your bases there, Sean.
Yeah. You know, I, as a former journalist, I wish you guys the best of luck, and actually would be really glad to help if I can. But
Sean,
Michael Allwood.
Go ahead and email me at michael@columbusfreepress.com.
I'll do it.
Okay.
You know, I am just so the skeptical side of it is, you know, the sustained appetite for this in this city concerns me, and I hope it's there. I really, really do hope it's there, but. You know, getting people off their duff to actually do something and, you know, even get engaged in a thoughtful conversation can be difficult on a sustained basis. But, you know, like I said, I'd be glad to help, and I really hope this works for you guys.
Well, Sean, I will tell you and everybody else who's listening that we're also optimistic but a little skeptical about things. But we did have our launch party last night at Little Rock Bar on North 4th Street, and the turnout was very good. And everyone who was at the event were very excited about it and were so enthusiastic. And I can't tell you how many times somebody came up to me and say, you know, the city really needs this. We really need this. And so that was very encouraging. And so there is a market, there is a public out there who is eager to get this kind of content.
All right, Sean, thanks a lot for that call. We were talking earlier about the other paper, and, you know, Bob Fitrakis, you've been a critic of the other paper. You've been criticized. Everyone in this room has been criticized by someone else in the media.
Yeah.
To what extent do you see the Columbus Free Press being that critic of the Dispatch, picking at every scab, you know, raking it over the coals? Is that where you want to go with this?
No. What I want to do is, at least from my perspective with the muckraking, is to report stuff that the Dispatch might not have reported or did not put it in a historical context. So I think there's massive amount of unreported facts that in order to have a real democratic debate in the city, they may see a good deal to take $250 million in casino tax and give it to four families that are very wealthy, including their own family. What I would suggest that money could be well spent elsewhere, developing the South Side, developing the Near East Side. So that would be a factual disagreement. It's not going to attack them for what they said. It's going to offer additional and new information or put that information in a different context for people to make their own decision.
And I would like to add that we're not going to do as the other paper did, to have a regular bit that's pretty much the function of what was called media morsels, if I recall.
I think so, yeah.
That pretty much just went through the paper every day and just looked for a gaffe. However, when the editorial stand of the Dispatch actually comes out and is contrary to some of their reporting, and I'm thinking of specifically, Bob, about the voting machine issue, when they said they reported one thing and then they said it's not a problem. And more than once, the Dispatch has tried to paint folks like Bob and Harvey and myself as tinfoil hat people, when in fact their own reporting has sort of proved the point that Bob and Harvey made in their book, for example. And Bob can speak to it a little bit better.
I mean, often their editorial pages are at odds with their own reporters.
But doesn't that tell you that the editorial page isn't driving the reporting?
To some extent, I think that's true. And and the reporting, I think, while it may have limits. In fact, look, I was an award-winning journalism. I won about a dozen awards in 5 years at the Columbus Live. Half of those were because reporters at the Columbus Dispatch gave me stories that they should have won those awards for.
Because they couldn't write them themselves. And you once worked in the building. I believe they refer to it over there as the golden handcuffs at the Dispatch. And I'm talking about the political reporters.
Well, that used to be the old media. I mean, now with the media cutbacks, I'm not so sure. It's more like the tin handcuffs.
I'm sure it's a very different atmosphere now than it was, say, 15 years ago.
Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. And congratulations to Bob and Michael for starting back up the Columbus Free Press.
Is this my friend, Chris?
I am your friend, Michael.
All right.
So now I put Allwood. We'll tell Ann it's Allwood. That's how you pronounce his last name.
I know. Sorry.
Anyways, it's funny, Michael, as I'm sitting here listening, I realize I know just about everybody that's calling in. The progressives in this town are thrilled to know that we've got a progressive publication.
But are there enough progressives to support it?
Yeah, that's like Adlai Stevenson. Someone came up to him and said, Mr. Stevenson, you have the vote of every thinking man in America. And Adlai said, well, that's not enough to get elected president. it's not enough to sustain this paper simply on the progressive community, although that is our key base of support. We've got to reach out to more moderate voices, the libertarian voices, to local activists that don't share all of our views, and we intend to do that, as well as young people that primarily want the culture and the entertainment, and we're willing to do that.
And can I mm-hmm. add one
sure.
thing
Michael
to that?
Michael Allwood.
I had a fellow come up to me last night, and he told me he came to that function strictly to have a conversation with me, and he intends to write about labor issues. And so, you know, when it comes to labor issues, those aren't necessary. There are a lot of people who are in the in unions and whatnot who are not necessarily progressives or liberals, but they are
social issues.
Right, but they are right on social issues, but on labor issues, it's another matter. And we're going to tell their side too, and that will be regardless of their political bent.
You're going to have a pretty small staff.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Chris, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks, Chris.
And the pronunciation of correction. Mm-hmm. Which is very appropriate. You know, one of the things that the Dispatch has or any big newspaper has, right. They have a lot of editors. They have a lot of people vetting the stories. Believe it or, you know, whether you agree with how they do it or not. But the fact is somebody's checking the spellings.
Editors.
They have copy editors. You check the spellings of names, which shockingly can be misspelled a lot. There's things that they check. They challenge them on the assertions that are made in articles. They have the... Not as many, but they still have a lot of people doing that. Are you going to be able to have that kind of advantage, or are you going to be able to pull these stories well enough so that people feel they can really rely on the information?
Well, we have a spell check and grammar check and one copy editor. Sure. Yeah, but I would point out the freepress.org has never retracted, or the Free Press, which came out monthly for 20 years, has never had to retract a story. I'd also point out we broke the story on the Killing Fields, the worst in the First Western newspaper. There's a variety, and we were the first newspaper that said gay people should have rights. So on a variety of issues, people thought we were wrong on the environment, women's rights, gay rights. We were ahead of the curve, and we were correct. And our, freepress.org, we've won a ton of awards. We won the Project Censor Award in 2005 when we said machines were missing in the inner city. The New York Times had to issue a retraction after the Washington Post was given the information from me. But we won the award because we actually proved that there were 42 missing machines all in black wards. So I think is that, factually, we'll do fine. We have never had problems in that area. Where we're going to have more problems, I think, is going to be distribution and particularly ad sales.
Which is
ultimately,
what...
it will be ad sales. Either the community accepts this and supports it, or it doesn't.
When Rick Edmonds from the Poynter Institute said the distribution is very expensive. And then, yeah, of course, getting the ads. It looks good today, but it's sustaining that
Absolutely.
Kind of thing. We have an email from Allison. She writes, I think Columbus is ready and has missed the other paper. I know I have. Only this style of news can give everyday people the news they want. I always look for nearby festivals, events, local restaurants, farmers markets, and more. Things that are news for the college students, young adults, and moms and dads of Columbus, but may not be newsworthy to a big paper like the Dispatch. What kind of niche items can we expect in the new paper?
By the way, you said her name is Allison?
Mm-hmm.
We want Allison to know that we'll be at the Hot Times Festival, so look for our booth
all
there.
Weekend.
And that's all weekend this weekend.
And
we will be at other festivals throughout the year. We'll try to make our presence known at a variety of events.
And again, we will be covering issues like, we will have a geek beat. We will have a variety of things that younger people are interested in, and do a variety of coverage up on the major campuses here in Columbus. And we hope to develop some real good, authentic voices and not people like myself writing about, when I was in college.
Tony in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Tony.
Hello. First off, I want to say I'm extremely happy to hear that there'll be a new alternative publication in Columbus. I think it's been something that's sorely missed the last couple of weeks. But I kind of want to bring up a point. I think the problem with the Dispatch and its monopoly over media isn't just that they're a media company. They're one of the largest real estate development companies and entities in the city. And there's just no way you can separate that from their reporting, whether it's them devaluing the cost of Nationwide Arena, which ultimately means less tax revenue for the schools, or whether it was having Mike Curtin head up the anti-casino, which was a sham and helped divert that money, or even the fact that they were a party in a case against Tommy Thompson. The Dispatch ran an article, didn't even mention that they were the one
leading the lawsuit until after the fold.
All right. So, I don't want this to turn into a Trash the Dispatch conversation. But, Tony, what are you getting at here?
Well, I think just having someone that's independent, even if they don't have the full staff, the full copy editors, having that counterpoint, whether it's a small viewpoint, just letting light in to the situation, I think would be extremely helpful. And when we talk about whether or not the Free Press will be financially viable or whether it'll be a great business plan, that's not the point. I mean, of course, there are the realities that it has to be able to sustain itself, but maybe it can serve something far greater to the community than just being able to hire some couple extra jobs and be on time for rent every month.
Well, Tony, let me say that we agree with you about letting some light in. That's really our primary purpose, is to provide that alternative voice. There will be things that we cover that the Dispatch wouldn't dare cover. I'll give you an example. The lead story this week about Columbus City Schools, there's information in there that has been available to the Dispatch, but they have not chosen to print it. Once again, I'll tell you that for anybody who reads this lead story, they're going to end up, if they read all the way through to the end, and admittedly it is quite a long story, but it is just packed with information. And by the time you are done reading it, you're going to be mad, especially if you live in the city of Columbus. You're going to be angry. And if you have children in Columbus City Schools, you're going to be angry.
Thanks a lot, Tony, for that call. I wanted to get at some other of the underpinnings of the financial situation for the Columbus Free Press. It's been operated by the nonprofit Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism since 1986. Tell us about the new arrangement with the Columbus Compact Corporation.
Well, the Compact it really is the majority owner of the LLC, the for-profit. The Free Press itself is only a minority, owns 20% of the LLC for part of our full transparency. We're providing the offices and mainly the content. And I guess, unfortunately for me, I'm working without pay. But I'm glad to do that, and I'm glad, you know, we can't really afford to pay
an editor in chief. It's one of seven jobs that Bob doesn't get paid for.
But, you know, I see it as a community service. And I think more than anything else, it's just a different point of view. And that's what you need in a newspaper town that only has one daily newspaper and really has no independent weeklies anymore. So I'm willing to do that.
There's also a crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo.com.
Right.
We'll have a link to that on our website. But
what's
happening?
Good, because we can use some help getting the word out.
It looked like you're down to a couple weeks now, and it looked like the crowd of two. Yeah, how's that? That's not going
well,
so great.
Well, actually, we did secure last night at the launch party.
Okay.
A couple thousand dollars more in pledges, which doesn't get us to our goal. But, you know, we appreciate the $5 donations, but we picked up a couple last night that were in
the $800 range. $20 and $100 even more.
Uh-huh.
There's something I want to say before, I know we're running short on time, but there has to be a place in this city where people who have stories to tell, whether it's being mistreated by an arm of government or being ripped off by somebody, there's got to be a place for people to come and tell their stories if they can't get it out any other way.
Are you making?
And we're it.
I'm sorry to interrupt
you. No, that's all right.
Because we're running out of time. I want to ask you: are you making any connections with any of the bloggers out there?
I think to some extent, Columbus Underground locally has been doing good stuff, and we have made some contact there. We will be checking regularly. I mean, there's a variety of good progressive muckraking blogs, and we're more than willing to bring those people in. But I think many of them think they're the future of media. We hope it's print media as well, because we love to actually read newspapers.
And a number of our writers that we have right now that are in this edition came to us via blogs. So, yeah, we have done that. And I'm willing to talk to anybody else who has a blog in this city about any sort of subject matter. Feel free to email me at michael@columbusfreepress.com.
We will have a link to the Columbus Free Press on our website at wosu.org/allsides. I want to thank my guest today, Michael Allwood. He's managing editor of the Free Press. The new Free Press came out today, launched today. It's in stands around the city. It's online. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And also Bob Fitrakis, editor-in-chief of the Free Press, working for free these days. May that change. We all need to eat. Thanks for joining us today.
All right. Thanks a lot.
And thanks to everybody for listening. Wow, it's been one of those weeks, hasn't it, guys? I want to say thanks to the All Sides staff. Producer Michael DeBonis, welcome back, Michael. Hope you had a great vacation. Associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Karim Shaban, Andrew Zissler, and Leticia Wiggins, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Also, Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrella, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Thanks for your help today, Eric. Sounded great. Thanks for listening. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.